Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
I don't know if I feel run down right now because I got the booster yesterday. I got the vaccination booster yesterday, Moderna mob. And I don't know if I feel run down because of that or I feel run down because of all of the college football coaching moves that have taken place in the last 24 hours. And I feel like my head is spinning from that more than anything else. And making matters worse is the best way I can describe it is faux outrage that takes place this time every year when a big name coach takes a big name job and does it in a way that isn't exactly smooth. I'm not quite sure if there's a right way to leave a place and go take the other job. Making matters worse in college football is how things now operate with early signing period. When the regular season is over, that first round of contact period, I believe, starts like Monday afternoon or today. It's like this week. You know, I've been trying to coordinate with the fine people at various institutions in the Triangle about getting coaches on this week, and a lot of it is related to travel because they're out recruiting. And that's why, with the transfer portal 2 in the mix, these jobs end up moving real fast. So Lincoln Riley takes the Southern Cal job. It's not because he's afraid of the SEC. It's because Southern Cal's throwing him a ton of freaking money. And it's not like he isn't already recruiting out of the state of California to bring them to Oklahoma. You know what's easier to do? When you want to recruit California, not try to bring them to Oklahoma. Say, hey, we could sell you the LA lifestyle, which has always been one of the big pushes for Southern Cal and why so many people look at that program and a wide open Pac-12 and wonder, what the hell is your problem? Why do you keep getting this wrong? They clearly got it right with Lincoln Riley, who's 38 years old. Dude's in the prime of his life. And he's got this opportunity to take yet another blue blood program in college football, revive that. Yeah, man, you're going to take it. The other one is Brian Kelly. And Brian Kelly is leaving Notre Dame, and he's taking the LSU job. Now, this one is surprising in that Notre Dame is viewed as one of the coveted jobs in all of college football for a variety of reasons. I make my jokey jokes at Notre Dame's expense. I know Giglio has a lot of issues with Notre Dame and how they're treated, but I also understand, this is where I disagree with Giglio, is that where you can have your beef with Notre Dame, and I certainly have mine, I can at the same time recognize they're given this power. I mean, Jack Swarbrick, the AD for Notre Dame, is in the power position for all sorts of college football moves, and they're not even part of a conference, and they're helping make decisions as it relates to the college football playoff, because that's whatever is good for Notre Dame. They feel like everybody else should be on board with it, too. Regardless, Brian Kelly leaving for LSU makes sense in one way and one way only. Money. And LSU's throwing this dude a whole hell of a lot of money, so much so that that guy, Brian Kelly, who at no point ever have I looked at that man and said to myself, I bet that man loves some fine Cajun cooking. People be talking about fit. I mean, I'm into it. Don't get me wrong. I'm in for the shenanigans about Brian Kelly down in Louisiana. Trying to talk to some dude with a thick Cajun accent about football while he's, you know, being Brian Kelly. But you know what? He's a good coach. I might not like the guy, but he's a good coach. It's the same thing I feel like Urban Meyer, right? Urban Meyer's another one of these guys that I'm like, I got no time for the fake business of leading men and all this other stuff. But if you want somebody to revive your college football program, dude does a good job. So Brian Kelly might work out. In the same way that Les Miles didn't really look like he was a right fit for LSU, or Nick Saban for that matter. But sometimes you can play the game. Nick Saban certainly knows how to play the game. It's the OG. I'm Joe Ovius. Giglio's out today. And we are giving away a VIP table to watch the best college games with your friends and a $50 tab at Abbey Road Tavern and Grill in Apex or Cary every week throughout the football season. Championship weekend, Wake Forest and Pitt. How about that? Look for a new video on our Facebook page every Wednesday. All you got to do is leave a comment. We'll randomly select somebody, and you'll get that VIP experience at Abbey Road Tavern and Grill. Two area locations, amazing wings, award-winning burgers, killer daily beer specials, and an awesome wait staff. Find more at abbeyroadnc.com. One other thing that I wanted to highlight with the last 24 hours, and I'm not saying this as a jaded or cynical person in the media. It's more along the lines of how many times can this happen before people suddenly accept that college coaches, especially college football coaches, operate on a day-to-day basis in what you can believe. Because a lot of people have been trying to do the whole old takes exposed thing with Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley. I mean, it's funny, but they're not unique in this situation. Like, people are trying to act like Brian Kelly. Here's Brian Kelly. I believe this was last week when somebody asked him about the possibility of other jobs. I think LSU was the top one because of all the money that's associated with the LSU job. And here's Brian Kelly and what he had to say.
Other than retiring from your current profession, could you see yourself leaving Notre Dame of your own volition?
No. I mean, look, I think Mike Tomlin had the best line, right? You know, unless that that fairy godmother comes by with that, you know, $250 million check, my wife would want to take a look at it first. I'd have to run it by her.
Well, I guess that check did come through for Brian Kelly, right? So,
guess she said yes.
I understand why we have to ask these questions, because they're relevant. But at the same time, that doesn't mean because a coach tells you one thing in a press conference that you have to believe him. I can't be the only one who thinks like this. But apparently sometimes I feel like I'm on an island because I pop up, I open my social media and it's sort of like, how can Brian Kelly look at us in the face and say that he's going to be here? You just look what he just said. He's like every other freaking college football coach. They're there for the money. And if you wanted further proof that it ain't about winning, this is a hard reality for people. And this is why I choose, as a sports fan, to have fun with this stuff. Because the minute you actually think it's about winning, you've made the mistake. Because Brian Kelly at Notre Dame is in a position to make the college football playoff. Something they've done before. They're not out of it. They are not out of it. But Brian Kelly's like, yeah, I mean, I could coach in a college football playoff game with this team, but nah, I got to go have po' boys with my dude down in the bayou. Like, that tells you what this is about. Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma has been in a really good spot, at Oklahoma in the Big 12, because people are acting like, you know, going to the SEC is in some way or form, you know, going to change dynamics for Oklahoma. Not necessarily. Because they're going to expand the playoffs. That's the whole reason why they're leaving for the SEC. Because they knew they can get into the playoffs. Otherwise, you stay in the Big 12. So what Lincoln Riley's doing is just kind of looking at his situation at 38 years old, look at the money that Southern Cal wants to offer, and he probably feels, you know what, I've taken Oklahoma as far as I can take it. So I'm moving on to something else. So, again, I ask the question, why do we act surprised when coaches do this? You should just be here for the jokes. Brian Kelly sends a text message to the entire Notre Dame team yesterday at like 10:30 at night. And it's like, men, .. He says he has limitless love for his team. All the stuff that you expect. Oh, by the way, we have a 7 a.m. meeting. That meeting this morning in South Bend lasted, I believe, 11 minutes. On-site reports had the meeting starting at 7 o'clock. At 7:13, there were reports that Brian Kelly was already in an SUV and getting the hell out of Dodge as players were starting to exit. As someone who has been in these situations before, that is big, this could have been an email energy. You brought me in for what? For that? Just shoot me an email, dude. I'll catch you later. Like, that's why I would be mad at Brian Kelly. Not for taking the job. For wasting my time. You call a 7 a.m. meeting?
When we already know?
After texting me at 10:30? And you spend 10 minutes? Nah, I got no time for that.
I'm hitting snooze.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be impressed if actually people showed up. Back to Lincoln Riley real quick. And again, things that are said and why we shouldn't believe them. Here's Lincoln Riley last week when he was asked specifically about the LSU job. And when you get specific, by the way, you end up screwing up because you give people an out. But here's Lincoln Riley talking about how, oh, the LSU job is whatever. No. But then he goes on Scott Van Pelt last night, already in his Southern Cal gear, and he has his own timeline, which doesn't make any sense.
When did this opportunity present itself to you, Lincoln, in a way that it was real enough that you really had to ponder what you were going to do?
Yeah, very early Sunday morning, USC engaged with some interest and wanted to have a conversation. And honestly, Scott, that's the first conversation at any point in my time at Oklahoma that I'd ever had with another football team. But I think just the history, the tradition, the excitement of the new opportunity.
So that was Lincoln Riley on Scott Van Pelt. That's called the agent was doing the conversation. And then Lincoln Riley just says to the agent, hey, so what's the deal? Oh, okay, cool. Now we can talk. Remember, I think Dan Wolkin of USA Today always says this. You understand that nobody's ever actually been offered the job until they actually say yes. That's how it works. If you already know the answer, they're not going to offer you the job. So that way they can always say, he was the only person we offered the job to because you knew the answer. It's kind of like when you're going through the process with a significant other and you understand that you're going to get married. There are a lot of conversations that take place before you actually ask the question. Only a fool would go into that with a ring as a surprise with a proposal. Now, you've made sure that you know what the answer is before you actually break out that ring. So that's how college football coaching works, too. Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com. College Football Insider joins us now on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Chip, what up?
How's it going?
Gamer, man. True grit.
Listen,
booster shots taking its toll on me. You know, Brownlow.
Are you a Moderna mutant?
Yeah, I'm a Moderna mob.
Yeah, I was about 20 to 24 hours. I started to feel it, and it was a drag. So I mean,
yeah, my thought
good luck, man,
my thought through. Process my thought process is kind of like an ACC media hospitality. Like if I just stick with Miller Lite, I'll be fine. So I thought I'm not going to mix, because they asked, like, you want Pfizer, you want Moderna? I'm like, well, I had Moderna before, so I'm going to stick with Moderna. It's like, why am I going to go from an IPA to a sour to, like, I don't know, a stout? I'm going to feel like crap the next day. I don't want to mix and match.
So I thought you were talking about how we power through those feelings that are so similar to the after effects of a vaccine or a
that
booster
too. Like,
and still show up for all of our hits interviews, man, like, and look nice. And it's like, if all I can do is just be positive and get through this segment, I'll do a lap, go to the bathroom, get some water, sit down and start the clock over again.
I mean, have I done shows from a Final Four site where after the interview I've had to go, like, puke and rally? Yes, I have. Listen, I'm not above it.
The real heroes are the faces that I've seen, like, after the first night in New Orleans for any New Orleans national championship, because the media day for the national championship game is Saturday morning at, like, 9 a.m.
Yeah.
At some, like, Tulane basketball gym or something.
Yep.
And then, like, no, an unnamed Clemson beat writer comes up. I'm like, oh, what's up, man? How's it going? He goes, like, yeah, I hadn't slept yet. Once it got to 4, I just decided I'd gamble till media day.
It's the OG, Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, hanging out with us, College Football Insider. I'm Joe Ovius. Chili will be back on Thursday when he recovers from his neck and back surgery. I don't think I've recovered from the last 24 hours of college football coaching changes. I'm not, you know, you do this long enough, you get to the point where things don't necessarily surprise you. I will admit that I was not surprised by Lincoln Riley taking the Southern Cal job, given the age, given the money, everything else, and what Southern Cal has to offer. I was legitimately surprised by Brian Kelly. I guess he got a taste of that conference life with the 1 year in the ACC. He's like, I need some more of that. I need a conference championship game to make sure that I can get into the college football playoff. So he's the crazy person who's going to take the LSU gig. That legitimately surprised me. Were you surprised by that?
Well, we had gotten to a point where his name was popping up because we had taken so many off the board.
Yeah.
And a lot of these names had come off the board because of contract extensions, which, if we're going to, you know, be really cynical about it, eye roll. If James Franklin still goes somewhere, then I guess that big old deal wasn't worth it. But I tend to believe that James Franklin, Mel Tucker, you know, Mark Stoops, like some of these other head coaches, as the new contracts are being announced, more than anything, it's signaling. You know, it's signaling to recruits, it's signaling to boosters, to important people within the program and the university. I ain't going anywhere right now. Dave Aranda at Baylor has another scenario where he did his signaling move. The school's getting together a new contract for him. And, you know, listen, much like a fantasy football draft, there's that sort of best available window. And eventually, as more names kept coming out, I was like, I mean, Brian Kelly is one of the 5 to 10 most successful coaches of the college football playoff era. LSU, we consider to be a top 5 job in all of college football. I don't think it will happen, but we're starting to reach to the point where otherwise LSU is going to have to hire someone that's beneath them, which is why I think that they ended up backing up the truck for him. What I think is the most interesting piece of this is the Brian Kelly side, which suggests to me two things. Number one, even in his older age, the man still has a hungry ego. Mm-hmm. And that number two, it is him saying that Notre Dame is a great place to you know, have 10, 11 win seasons in the expanded college football playoff. It's a great place to make the college football playoff, but to win a national championship, Notre Dame just is not going to be able to get the talent. LSU is going to be able to get the talent. And I really think that they're starting to become a little bit of a belief within the coaching community that, and I'm just want to say this so the statement stands alone.
Yeah.
If Les Miles and Ed Orgeron can win a national championship, anyone can win a national championship. Anyone. Yeah. Like Nick Saban did it. He's the GOAT, whatever. But the 07 and the 19 titles, like the way they've come together and the way that we view both of those head coaches, especially now, mm-hmm. I think that Brian Kelly says, like, I've got more coaching chops than Les Miles or Ed Orgeron. If I go there with all that commitment, with the resources and the talent that's within that state, and the laxer standards,
yeah, there's
then
that too.
I can be able to win a national championship.
So what does Notre Dame do next? I mean, I know, like, what is it? Urban Meyer, I guess, no, through the AP said, like, I'm not interested in going back to college coaching, which I don't believe, but whatever. But where does Notre Dame go? Do they go internal or do they try? And because one thing that I do agree with Jack Swarbrick, the AD at Notre Dame, is that however you feel about Brian Kelly as a person, and I have my own opinions on that, Notre Dame is in a much better place today than where it was, what, 14 years ago or whatever it was, when he took over, where things were just, it just had become a mess and they were a laughingstock. So he leaves a very solid, intact program that somebody else can come in and kind of keep it going. But where do they go for that?
So there are two options that are both going to be in-house, the offensive coordinator, Tommy Reese, the defensive coordinator, Marcus Freeman. And the thing that's fascinating is that Pete Sampson of Irish Illustrated, I believe, reported that Brian Kelly is thinking about doing the Lincoln Riley and just bringing the whole staff with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that Marcus Freeman and Tommy Reese may reportedly in the next week, days, hours, who knows, be considering whether they want to interview for a job, which is not guaranteed, as the head coach of Notre Dame, or go with Brian Kelly, their former boss, to LSU, where it is being reported that Marcus Freeman, as defensive coordinator, could be made one of the highest paid assistants in all of college football. So that is an interesting dynamic, because those are two options that are both the keep it in the family move. But then there's also Luke Fickell, who it has long been understood that there's a very, very short list of jobs that Luke Fickell was really interested in even leaving Cincinnati for.
Mm-hmm.
But Notre Dame is absolutely believed to be one of those jobs. That means that you can't really do much until after Cincinnati plays in the college football playoff.
Are you? Come on. You don't really think that Cincinnati is going to be in the college football playoff, do you?
As long as they beat Houston, I do believe so.
No, they'll find a way to keep them out.
Dude, I've run the scenarios. I've done the Chipolytics. I've run all the
chipulations. Please, Chip Patterson, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Ovies. He's on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Please explain to me the Chipolytics, because I am at a loss. I don't believe the college football playoff is going to have a group of five team in that they would rather have, hell, a two-loss Alabama team in rather than that.
I don't think that the two-loss Alabama situation by any margin in the SEC championship would be enough to be able to get, like, it would be Notre Dame over Cincinnati, and you're not going to do a zombie Irish team. I mean, this is, if you want to go total CFP anon and put on your tinfoil hat, then you are not going to have a zombie fighting Irish team as your product. Even if it is Notre Dame, you would rather sell Cincinnati against Georgia, the true David against the only Goliath that the sport has. And you point to the 24-21 result in last year's Peach Bowl. You call it a rematch. You say it was 3 points then. Like, I think that they've turned this the other way to realize that a selling point for a college football playoff that is already guaranteed to have at least one, potentially even two newbies to the college football playoff, when you've already lost Oklahoma, you've already lost Clemson, you've already lost Ohio State, then actually selling the novelty might be something that works. But I do think that Cincinnati's position right now is set up such that as long as it beats Houston, it should be in the Final Four.
What do you do about Michigan?
Michigan's a win and you're in, lose and you're not.
Okay. But not a situation. Like, I'm trying to think of the. I'm trying to debunk your Chipolytics here, in terms of like, because if Alabama wins,
if Alabama wins, it gets really really hairy because you're debating a 13-0 Cincinnati potentially against 12-1 Oklahoma State.
Yes,
and that's where like that's a really tough decision. But Oklahoma State's strength of schedule is, like, among these other teams, is closer to Cincinnati than it is to, say, Michigan.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll see. I'm still skeptical.
Listen, the Alabama beats Georgia, Michigan wins, Oklahoma State wins, is the like, really difficult, tough spot for Cincinnati, without a doubt. But I believe it, they're good.
Okay. All right. All right. I'll take your word for it. To the ACC, where the all ACC teams came out today, and I thought it was interesting today that Devin Leary was, in terms of voting, behind Sam Howell at North Carolina. Now, Kenny Pickett at Pitt was the first team, right? And that's followed by Sam Hartman over at Wake Forest, and you got Brennan Armstrong. This was a loaded ACC quarterback group. And Kenny Pickett absolutely deserves to be first-team All-ACC. But I do think it's interesting that Devin Leary and where he was voted only adds to the Dave Doran NC State respect talking point. And I can't imagine that this will not be used as offseason motivation to bring these, like, to have these, like, Devin Leary come back for another season, a bunch of these other guys coming back for next season, where you look at this season as a window for the Wolfpack that they missed and that you have the expectation that Clemson is going to bounce right back. Is it crazy to think that that window isn't closing just because the year ends and we expect Clemson to magically get better next season?
Like, the idea that NC State beating Clemson, bringing pieces back, carrying all of the confidence,
all the chip on the shoulder about respect and everything else, actually creates a scenario where NC State hasn't seen the window close for next year in the Atlantic.
The window to win an ACC championship is only opens for a brief time for schools that do not compete for it on a year in, year out basis. I think that what's more important is the long lasting change that's happened over the last 2 years and the changed expectations, the way the standard has changed, the way that the players around that program, in that program, the support staff, the people around that program have felt the front-running pressure. They have felt what it's like going into those games with the expectation that you are winning. And to be able to sell the, you know, chip on the shoulder, disrespect, like that definitely goes well with the themes and the mood board and the vision board that NC State football likes to use. But regardless of, like, the window might be closed to win an ACC championship, you're right, but I think the expectation has changed and the bar has been raised in that it's not a window to compete for an ACC championship. You should go into each season expecting to compete for an ACC championship,
sure,
but know that winning the ACC championship is a window that opens and closes. But if you are closer to that level, then it is more likely that you can cash in when it's your time.
I think there's two separate conversations now with NC State. You and I are in agreement about where Dave Doran has positioned NC State. They're like an actual program now. And correct. we can quibble over, and I know some state fans like to do this, quibble over big wins and you beat a down Clemson team and all this other stuff, right? I get all that stuff. But if you actually look at the last 5 years and not his entire time at NC State, just this era of having rebuilt what happened after Tom O'Brien, that 2019 season, which was injury riddled, 4-8 is a blip. And the fact that they were able to still do what they did this season with all the injuries they had on the defensive side of things, it showed you the depth that they had actually developed over time that leaves you confident that this is an actual program now. So if you're in that contention cycle, if you're having a run it back type off season for NC State and you still have that depth, you need to convince me that Clemson has fixed all their problems in the offseason. Because you got to remember, Dabo, the head coach, is still kind of like, he's making big strides on the transfer portal stuff. Like, Dabo needs to evolve a little bit, and I think that this season isn't necessarily a blip. It could just be that Clemson fell back a little bit because of Dabo's stubbornness with the modern nature of college football. Am I wrong in that?
The personnel depth issues that Clemson faced was something unlike anything that the Tigers had experienced in their run of ACC championships. Mm-hmm. I mean, we heard Dave Clawson say that at halftime of the Clemson Wake game. He said, look, they're thin. We just need many snaps as possible. I mean, it was a really good game plan for a team with much less talent. It just ended up that they couldn't get enough first downs, and Clemson decided it was just going to run the ball as successfully as Army did, scoring less points than Army, but still the point remains. I think that the Clemson program, though, if all of the players on that injury report had been on the field and they had had better injury luck, then, you know, they're probably a win or two better. Now, which wins are those? Could, you know, NC State caught them early in the year. So mm-hmm. I guess that speaks a little bit more to the quality of the win and the lack of excuses that the Tigers have. Those offensive issues are with healthy players.
Yeah, I was going to say that was a better team when NC State played them. And same with Georgia, right? Right out of the gate. I mean, that's actually kind of viewed as a good win now, if you really think about it.
This Clemson team with better injury luck will be closer to where Clemson's at. But the idea that Clemson needs to evolve is probably a good sign, because it means that their first operating system has run out and started to get slow and buggy, because we're really still in the first version of the modern Clemson power.
Chip, we also know that Apple sends updates specifically to make that happen. I'm just saying.
Well, I tell you what that update needs to be is it needs to be more a little bit diverse in the kind of wide receiver you recruit, because if you get six big old Cadillacs that are all 6'4", 220 pounds, you don't have enough Hunter Renfros and Amari Rodgers to split the field out, then guess what? If you have a quarterback who's got some accuracy issues because he just can't get settled, then you're going to have trouble moving the ball down the field.
Chip Patterson, CBS Sports, College Football Insider. We appreciate the time. Thanks for pinch hitting today, Chip.
Sounds good.
David Teal, longtime ACC columnist. He joins us now on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. Mr. Teal, how are you?
Joe, would you please keep Julio out of hospitals?
I know. It's if it's not, I mean, his boys thankfully are fine after the car accident.
Yes.
Obviously, his wife, Jessica, has had had a very public fight with cancer.
Right.
And she is fine. Jessica's great. And then now Julio's back is like breaking down on him. It's funny, I joked, Adam Gold and I did a show in some form or fashion for nearly 20 years, and his back was fine after carrying me that long. Gilio's been doing this not even 2 years, and his back's given out carrying my ass on the radio, man. It's wild. I don't get it. So appreciate.
Have you put on weight?
Yes, and I blame Gilio, because he's always bringing snacks. Anyway, appreciate you coming on short notice, but I'm glad you were able to, because I have three pressing questions related to Virginia Tech and Virginia. So they hire David Pry, Brent Pry. Excuse me, I'm getting my Dave Dorn question a little early. So Brent Pry, who was a defensive coordinator at Penn State for several years, has taken this job. He was, a defensive graduate assistant under Frank Beamer in the mid-90s. So there's obviously that pedigree there. But after Justin Fuente's task, I thought, when he took the job, was to kind of modernize Virginia Tech football. What is Pry's task after that never really took off for Fuente?
I don't know that it's to modernize Virginia Tech football, Joe. I think he's got as much of a PR job with the base as he has a coaching and recruiting job within the program. He needs to reestablish ties in Virginia. And he has recruited the state quite well for Penn State. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if it translates now that he's the big whistle at Virginia Tech. But this is a fan base that for decades was accustomed to one of their own running the show. And Frank Beamer played to that. And Justin Fuente, for whatever reason, was never able to establish that bond. Even after leading the program to a Coastal Division title in his first season, and even after following that up with a 9-win season, there was just never that connection. And Brent Pry needs to make it.
David Teal joining us here on the OG, longtime ACC columnist on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. And with Virginia Tech, is this a pining for the old days under Frank Beamer that has gotten people that needs this relationship repaired? I mean, is this more of a fan base issue, or is it something that Justin Fuente was more of a Fuente issue?
I think it was more of a Fuente issue. I don't think it was necessarily, you know, it has to be like it used to, because I mean Fuente embraced Bud Foster, and he established assigning the number 25 on a weekly basis to one standout player, Beamer having worn 25 when he was a Hokies defensive back. So he made that outreach, but for some reason it just didn't happen. And it will be fascinating to see if Brent Pry can do it. I mean, he went to high school in Lexington, Virginia, right up the road. His daddy was the offensive coordinator at VMI there. His father is a longtime college football coach. Mm-hmm. So he's been doing this for nearly 30 years since he graduated from the University of Buffalo in 1993. And, you know, now he's got his chance. He's 52 years old. It's not like he's some kid.
Yeah, that's true, too. It's funny how we look at like somebody like Lincoln Riley, who's taking the Southern Cal job at 38, and that's young. Or somebody like Dave Doran, who's not quite 50 yet, or he's about to turn 50, and we view these guys as old. We're just used to seeing them for a very long time. I still think they're young, relatively speaking, in coaching terms. And that gets me to Dave Doran, the NC State head coach. David Teal, longtime columnist, ACC for Richmond Times-Dispatch. Your colleague, Mike Barber, tweeted out that it was a level of interest from Virginia Tech, or people who might be interested in Virginia Tech. And he had all the names. You know, Pry was obviously one of them, and he ended up getting the job. But Barber said at the end, the wildest one I've heard is Dave Doran, NC State. What? What's that about?
I can't imagine that there was mutual interest there. And there may have been interest from neither party. Might there have been an interest of a representative floating that to someone for obvious reasons, perhaps?
Forever making sure that your assistants get the money they need?
Yes. And that's one thing that Virginia Tech is going to do, having hired a rookie head coach. Mm-hmm. They are going to markedly increase the pool of money for assistant coaching salaries, and they are going to expand the recruiting staff and give Brent Pry some assets that, in his defense, Justin Fuente never had.
David Teal here on the OG. I'm Joe Ovius. He joins us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. We'll close with this, Teal. Got the release today from the ACC that they finally, after 2 years of negotiation, they finally got Comcast to carry the ACC network, which is obviously important for the ACC to make money. More subscribers, the better. But I feel like all of this is a buried lead as it relates to the contract that allows for games to still show up on Bally Sports and things like that, the money that is owed to Raycom. And that, I think that comes off the books in a couple of years. But the question is, can the ACC still, like, find ways to generate more money? I mean, I know that's Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner's task. One of his big tasks is to find ways to keep things moving upward in the money coming in. But I feel like they're kind of locked in with the contract they have, and they can't get out of that for another couple of years. It's great that they get the distribution, but they still got the albatross of Raycom around them.
Right. Not only that, their deal with ESPN, Joe, it goes through 2036. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, the SEC and Big Ten and Pac-12 are renegotiating deals far sooner than that. So even with the windfall from Comcast, which if you listen to Dan Levitard's podcast with John Skipper from mm-hmm. the summer, and Skipper talking about what a cable subscriber means in terms of revenue, if you do the math, this could mean potentially up to $100 million increase mm-hmm. annually in the ACC's television revenue, which is a 30% bump.
That's kind of big.
Yeah, that's very big. But when you think about it, that'll take the ACC above $400 million in annual television, right? Mm-hmm. Just the TV part of it. But the SEC is getting ready to start a deal with ESPN where just that Saturday afternoon 3:30 game, that one property mm-hmm. is going to be worth $300 million.
Well,
one game, dude.
I go back and forth on that with the contract that they signed with ESPN through 2035. To me, it was about the grant of rights and making sure that there was stability. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody as I always tell, it's like the old. It's Lavelle Moton, the NC Central basketball coach, always likes to point this out with guys who go to the NBA. Not everybody's LeBron. Not everybody's Kevin Durant. You need a role player, right? And there's nothing wrong with being third. There's nothing wrong with being fourth. You're there. That's the important part. And I think that's kind of where the ACC right now is with that contract. They could be the Big 12, but they're not. They could be the Pac-12 in a worse situation, but they're not. And I think that's a credit to looking at the big picture and locking that thing in until 2035.
Agreed.
But the ACC is not going to catch up to the SEC, and that's despite all the ACC network products that I'm buying, David. David Teal, Richmond Times-Dispatch columnist. We appreciate the time, David, and thanks for helping me out today.
Anytime, and please take care of our boy.
We will. I'll make sure Jillio is fine after this. At Inside Carolina, you recently released a video that talked about Hubert Davis as the head coach at North Carolina having a messaging problem. And I agree with you. This is somebody who's never been a head coach before. And while you can be around Roy Williams for as long as he had, to actually go out there and do it requires, I thought, a level of patience. But when we talked to Bubba Cunningham, AD at North Carolina, back when they hired Hubert Davis, and I asked him about projecting patience with somebody who's literally learning on the job at the top, if not one of the top college basketball programs, here was his response.
Oh, I wouldn't project patience. I would project that we want to be successful. We want to be successful immediately. And, you know, Hubert spoke today about the passion, the energy, the enthusiasm. We're not looking to rebuild. We're looking to be really good next year. How does that manifest itself? You know, time will tell. But what I believe and what I think everybody heard today is he is passionate about being good, passionate about providing these opportunities for kids to excel in what they do. I think, as he shared, I think we have a very talented team. Mm-hmm. I think we have some holes. I think we can do a lot of things better. But we fully expect we're going to be competing next year. So, you know, I just believe that.
So that was Bubba Cunningham with us back when they hired Hubert Davis in April. Greg Barnes of Inside Carolina, is that, in hindsight, was that the way to go about it?
I guess it remains to be seen, Joe. This is a unique situation. We have been so spoiled in the triangle with regard to basketball coaches. that so many of our off-season conversations over the years have been about North Carolina's players mm-hmm. without the variable of coaching because of Roy Williams. Mm-hmm. It's been about Duke's players, not the variable of coaching because of Mike Krzyzewski. That's about to change. I mean, that is changing for North Carolina. That will change next year for Duke. And so this offseason, it was as if Roy Williams was still the head coach. And that was what I found so interesting.
Right.
Is, on social media, on our message boards, everybody was talking about the roster and how it was going to set up without any very minimal conversation about how things would change with Hubert Davis. And this has kind of been status quo. And so when North Carolina doesn't look good in its first six games, and I think they looked their best against Purdue, and that was a loss, mm-hmm. and people are kind of scratching their heads, I'm kind of like, well, this guy's been coaching for six games. There's going to be a transition period. It's going to take a process. And so I think a lot of fans have different opinions on that.
Greg Barnes, Inside Carolina, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Ovias. All right, so what is North Carolina's biggest problem? I have my theory, but what is, in your opinion, their biggest issue so far going to this ACC Big Ten Challenge game tomorrow?
Well, I think clearly it's defense in terms of not necessarily scheme. I think it's more of the will to and determination. If you watch the Tennessee game, the Tar Heels were lethargic. They were not playing with the passion you would typically expect. And that's a problem. I mean, you cannot scheme around those kind of issues. They looked better against UNC Asheville, and Hubert Davis switched up some things schematically as well. But I think that's the biggest thing, is he's got to get them to buy in on the defensive end of the floor. We have seen so many Roy Williams teams over the year be so good offensively, they really weren't concerned with defense mm-hmm. until they had to be. And that's kind of how this team has looked early, because they are pretty good offensively. But, as you mentioned kind of in the lead-in here, because of how this schedule is shaping up and because of how bad the ACC looks right now mm-hmm. outside of Duke, the opportunity to build your resume is pretty slim. Mm-hmm. And so games like tomorrow night against Michigan, at some point they've got to take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, it's a good point about the ACC, because based on early returns, it does look like a wide open ACC, but not in a good way. Obviously, that's below Duke, which has – I mean, look – You and I both know that Mike Krzyzewski came back for a reason.
Right.
He saw that roster. We've now seen the roster. We go, oh, yeah, no wonder you wanted to run it back one more time. It makes sense now. So the rest of it, though, and I feel like that's where there's an opportunity for North Carolina to salvage this within the ACC. I just find it I find it interesting. It's just it's a reminder that basketball still moves the needle in Chapel Hill, because – the expectations for North Carolina basketball this year should have been recalibrated given the things that we just discussed regarding Hubert Davis never having been a head coach and there was going to be a transition period. Yet already there's had to be some messaging, whether it comes from you at Inside Carolina or what I've seen on GoHeels.com, trying to just say to fans, hey, chill with Hubert Davis. But on the football side of things, I didn't get the same sense. There was actual expectations, actual stakes for North Carolina with Sam Howell at quarterback, who just doesn't grow on trees. And the season has pretty much been a disappointment. So with all that being said, do you expect that level of disappointment to translate into some serious looks in the coordinator position? Because I don't know about you, but I did not see the defense, which was something that was supposed to get better this year, improve.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the reason those expectations existed is because the entire offensive line was back. So you assume that could be a group that could lead the offense along with Sam Howell, as you said. And then defensively, they returned 10 guys that were starters and most of the two deep. So you didn't need the defense to be great. You needed the defense to be adequate, mm-hmm. to be top 50. And I think right now they're about 100th. At the end of the season. So not good. And actually, they've probably taken a little bit of a step back from last year. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I don't know that Mack Brown is quite ready to make a move with Jay Bateman. I think he understands what Jay wants to do. I think he likes his scheme, mm-hmm. which is very similar to what Georgia does, just without the talent. And Jay is a very good recruiter. And so I think a combination of those things and the fact that Mack Brown is willing, he has no
no pressure on him whatsoever. He's going to coach in North Carolina as long as he wants. And so I think he's willing to say, you know what, let's get another elite recruiting class in. Let's see if we can fix some of these issues this offseason. Now, that would put Jay Bateman on the hot seat next year, of course. He would have to produce then. But it just seems right now that Mack Brown is not necessarily happy with how the defense has been playing, but he thinks that the potential is there for them to make significant strides next year.
And we'll close on this. Greg Barnes, Inside Carolina, joining us. I understand the idea that we can out-recruit these issues, so to speak. More talent, develop these guys, more of these guys, the better. So where do things stand with Mack Brown and recruiting at North Carolina now that he's entering offseason going into year four?
Yeah, well, they're about to sign another top 10 class. And I think Mack would tell you it's quite possibly the best he's ever signed in Chapel Hill. So he's always been a great recruiter. That hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And so it really is a matter of keeping that up and doing a better job of the player development in the offseason, because I think fans got, for the first time, they were a little bit frustrated with how this season went.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to have to show that, yes, the talent's there, but now we've got to get those guys to play up to their talent ranking, which we haven't seen, of course, this year.
Drake May's going to have a lot to live up to, though, at the quarterback position.
He is. There's a lot of guys that have a lot of lofty rankings beside their names that need to step up.
Greg Barnes, Inside Carolina, always does great work. Appreciate the time, Greg.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Julian Council does Locked On Panthers. He joins us now on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. Julian, what's up, man?
Hey, Joe. How you doing, buddy?
Not great. Booster's kicking my ass right now.
Oh, you got your booster?
Yeah.
I guess I got to go get that at some point here soon.
Well, it's funny. I gambled. I thought, all right, I'll do it after the show. Whatever side effects I get from the booster, hopefully they'll happen overnight or like before lunchtime. Wrong. I started getting, you know, like chills and stuff at 2 o'clock in the freaking afternoon. I'm currently doing the show in my puffer jacket, hoodie, you name it. I got to turn the thermostat up in here in the studio. But
yikes. Okay. Here's a key question for you, though.
Yeah.
Did you go with the Arnold Pharma?
No.
No. You didn't?
No, I went. I'm Moderna Mob.
Okay. I'm a Pfizer fam. So maybe I'm going to go with the Moderna Mob next
time. What? You go half and half on that?
Yeah, you can do it, apparently, and they're calling it the Arnold Pharma, so I kind of want to do it just so I can say you got the Arnold Pharma.
Well, I'm waiting for my 5G stuff to kick in a little bit better, but we'll see. It might not have taken yet, so hopefully.
Not still magnetic, Joe?
No, actually, I held up my phone to my face. It didn't stick, so I'm good right now. Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast, joining us here on the OG. All right. Things have gone to hell in a handbasket really quick. The optimism from a couple of weeks ago with Cam Newton's return. It's like three games ago, it was about the vibes, right? Cam Newton's back. He didn't really do much, quote unquote, with two touchdowns, but he scored two touchdowns. And you saw the energy from the team and how everybody was reacting to that. I felt that Cam Newton played a good game against the Washington football team, and that this game this past weekend was more of against the Dolphins, was just kind of a roller coaster Cam Newton game that was made worse by the fact that the entire team continues to be bad. The whole thing was bad on Sunday against the Dolphins, which makes this really difficult to assess at this point in time. I mean, I can point to Matt Rhule for some of the coaching issues. I can point to Joe Brady for not really evolving this offense, even with Cam Newton being back. But the teams still have to, you know, the players have to go out and execute, and they've also been bad too, especially the defense, which has been surprising.
Yeah, I mean, they've gotten so many things wrong. It's kind of hard, like you just said, to just pinpoint one spot. Like, Cam was really, really bad. He was historically bad on Sunday. He had the lowest completion percentage in a game next to Joey Harrington of the Detroit Lions. And that's just not a name that you want to be associated with when it comes to the NFL. Maybe if you're comparing their college careers, because Harrington was good at Oregon. But no, even then, you probably don't want to be associated with that name. And having, what, a 5.6 passer rating, it just wasn't good. The thing is, Matt Rhule had said this, that everybody on offense was bad, so you can't really just blame Cam for the loss. The offensive line had probably their worst game that we have maybe ever seen from a Carolina Panthers offensive line, whether it's been Matt Rhule or Ron Rivera or John Fox. It was terrible. And how can you evaluate it, like you said, when the O-line is not protecting? Because P.J. Walker goes in there and he looks worse, and it's not like he's ever really looked all that great outside of the Arizona game. Yeah, there's a ton of areas where even the strong points of this team, like the defense, has kind of come back to earth the last couple of weeks. And I can't really get mad at them about that because they've been out there all season long trying to even carry him to the point where they could be a 500 team once Cam stepped in and came in against Arizona a couple weeks ago.
Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Ovias. Jillio will be back on Thursday. All right, so about the quarterback position. You just go out, you go back out there with Cam and hope that the roller coaster produces good Cam again. I mean, I'm with you on the PJ Walker stuff. I know Matt Rhule, the head coach, talked about Sam Darnold throw on the sideline, but they can't go back to Sam Darnold, right?
No, they're not going to do that. I mean, they could. I just don't think they're going to do that. I think with Cam, though, let's just look at it realistically. Like, what are the expectations for it? Like, what were they for Cam Newton? He came in, did what, 9 plays against Arizona, scored the 2 touchdowns. Everyone was excited.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. He played well against Washington, considering he'd only been here for a week and a half. And you get in Miami Dolphins defense, where he at least played against them twice last season. So he knew what kind of look he was going to get from Brian Flores from that defense. Things didn't work out. He's only been in this offense for 2.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has a bye week where he's going to get into the book and with Sean Ryan, the quarterback coach here in Carolina. And hopefully next time they come out next Sunday against Atlanta, he has an even firmer grasp of the system. So there is a built-in excuse. There was plenty of built-in excuses for Cam Newton on Sunday. His lack of knowledge of the playbook, which is why Matt Rhule said he was going to take him out of the game and have PJ Walker run the 2-minute, and something he wanted to do last week, where PJ was expected to play against Washington, but Cam played so well, they figured, all right, let's keep him in there. He didn't understand the offense, at least to the level that it's necessary for them to have gone out there and played well. The defense or the offensive line didn't play well. DJ Moore had 2 drops on that drive that led to the blocked punt for a touchdown for Miami. So it wasn't just Cam.
Yeah.
I don't know what they do moving forward. I think you got to stick with Cam the rest of the season because you wouldn't have brought him here if you really had a lot of faith in PJ Walker. They can certainly incorporate PJ if need be. I just don't know what anyone's expecting to get out of him that's going to help them win football games. I get it. Arizona was great, but it was also the defense came out and played lights out against the Cardinals and got the takeaways early in that game. So, yeah, you got to stick with Cam. Hope for the best, but the offseason – we might be headed towards another painful breakup.
That's the thing. So, like, I and Julian Council joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Ovias. Jillio will be back on Thursday. Julian Council hosts the Locked On Panthers podcast. So, Cam was a desperation move, and Cam understood that the Panthers were desperate because they felt if they're in win now mode and you feel like I can help you win now, well, then I'm going to get my money. And good for Cam Newton. I'm not knocking it. I mean, he understood his leverage and he took advantage of it.
Yeah.
But therein lies the rub, the mixed messaging that comes from the Carolina Panthers. And I'm not quite sure where that mixed messaging is coming from. When David Tepper decided to move on from Ron Rivera, who's now with Washington, it made sense. It was time for a fresh start. Bring in your guy. And I'm paraphrasing here, but David Tepper said something to the effect of, are you willing to deal with a couple of years of pain for like 20 years of success, right?
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, you are setting the table for a rebuild, and I think people can get behind that. So the plan was Teddy Bridgewater, find your next QB while Teddy Bridgewater literally bridges you to the next guy. And then by year 3 of the Matt Rhule era, then we can start assessing this regime, okay? But that's not what they did. Instead, I guess they just they felt like they were on a hot streak, and they suddenly went. Their moves indicated that they were in a win now mode, and I can see why, because of how the open nature of parity in the NFL. But it has blown up spectacularly in their face, and we're looking at another offseason where they truly do need to rebuild. They got to fix the offensive line. They got to find the quarterback of the future, and I don't see that happening through free agency. So I feel like they set themselves back another 2 years by how they acted this year.
Nothing that they've done since Matt Rhule took over has really made all that much sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even talking about the Bridgewater move. That wasn't a bad move,
no,
in my opinion. The only thing is you had to stick with it. They've tried so often when it came to quarterback. They tried to skip steps. You can bring in Teddy Bridgewater. You want to do that? That's fine. But you have to identify a quarterback of the future along the way, which they did not do last year in 2020 during the draft, or this past year, which would have made the most sense when you're sitting at 8th overall,
mm-hmm,
in Justin Fields and
Mac Jones.
Are, who you had on your Senior Bowl roster down Mobile, who you got to work with, were both available. I wasn't someone who endorsed to bring any one of those guys in. I thought they should have been building on the offensive line, which I think they would have done had Penei Sewell not been drafted by the Detroit Lions. Mm-hmm. But either way, they tried to skip steps, and they figured, all right, let's go get Sam Darnold, mainly because the same guy you mentioned there who said, you know, having the short-term pain for the long-term success, David Tepper, he couldn't sit there and listen to his own words and take his own advice. He was not patient enough. That's why they've been so aggressive in trying to get a Deshaun Watson or going out there and trying to get a Matthew Stafford, and why I don't believe, even this upcoming offseason, that they're going to be interested in a Kenny Pickett or a Matt Corral, because he wants a veteran quarterback because he wants to win now. I also think that they got fooled by the 3-0 start and didn't realize that the teams that they played in New York and Houston are terrible. In New Orleans, they had a perfect storm when they beat them.
Yeah.
And they felt at that point in time, it's like, oh, hey, maybe we are a contender for the playoffs. That's what the statistics say. Mm-hmm. But look at it. It's a 14-game season, 15 more weeks added on with the bye week. Plenty of things are going to happen moving forward. And they got caught up, didn't think their, you know, stink. And then they went out there, brought in Gilmore, which made sense, I guess. It was a shock. And they brought in Cam because it was necessary to try and keep winning. And it's the best situation for the team that, hey, you want to at least have the illusion that you're trying to do something and trying to win and salvage the season. But I feel like they made so many missteps where had they just stuck with Teddy Bridgewater and continue to have a young defense that looks good and to try and build towards getting to the playoffs next season instead of trying to do it now, then people aren't mad as hell and talking about Matt Rhule. Hey, please go to Oklahoma or wherever else.
I think Temple needs a coach again. Temple needs a coach again.
Yeah, they do. He can always go back. We found that out with Cam.
Although something tells me the return won't be as glorious as the Cam Newton return. Julia Council.
He's getting that Tepper money regardless.
Well, this is true. Although if you see some of the money that's getting thrown around in college, I mean, maybe you want to go back there.
He's getting ripped off here.
And that's my curiosity. We'll close on this. With Matt Rhule as the head coach, I go back to something that Joel Klatt said on Colin Cowherd's show a couple weeks ago, where you get to the NFL and you realize it's a whole different thing, man. You're not the personality. You're not the face. You're dealing with grown-ass men, and it's one thing to deal with boosters, but you're dealing with a really rich owner who wants things done a particular way. And I get that why you want to go to the NFL. It's the highest point of football. But maybe it's not what you thought it was cut out to be, right? You know, people. This happens all the time. People take what they thought was their dream job, and it ends up not being their dream job, and they had a good enough space where they were before. I can envision a scenario where not this offseason, but next offseason, Matt Rhule's looking at the college coaching carousel and going, you know what? Let me go back and revive a program the way I know how to do it.
Yeah, that's the thing, too. I don't know if he's going to be the kind of guy who's going to leave midseason like Bobby Petrino.
He's not going to do that.
And that's what makes it difficult. I think it was Stephen Godfrey, who does a really good job with Split Zone Duo. He's actually one of the few people out there who you should really listen to when it comes to his coaching carousel stuff, because those guys are batting 1,000 right now outside of the Washington job, which who really cares about what happens at Washington. But even still, like, I just don't know if Matt Rhule can get a college job of that level that he had back at Baylor, where they were a win away from the college football playoff. Because those jobs just aren't going to be available in the middle of January, which is when he would be available unless he gets fired early by David Tepper, who has already proven that, hey, if he doesn't think it's going to work out, he'll go ahead and rip the Band-Aid. So that might help out Matt Rhule. And he also wanted to give Ron Rivera an opportunity to look at all of his options, even though he couldn't get hired until the end of January anyway, because that's when the NFL does their hiring cycle. But you might be right. Maybe Matt Rhule does recognize that this is not the right situation for him. And we'll find out next year, because we've seen in the past at Temple and Baylor, first year is not great. The second year they improve, and it's really hard to see improvement right now in terms of the record and the inconsistency and his message just not getting through, which is what he said. 5 times a season it has, 7 times it hasn't. What's that? And I might be speaking towards what you're bringing up here in terms of a former college coach coming to the NFL and these guys not necessarily buying into what he's selling to them.
Well, I mean, I read too much into it, but and Julian Council joining us here on the OG from the Locked On Panthers podcast. When Cam Newton came back, it almost sounded like he was trying to convince himself about Cam Newton. You know, it was like, you know, I needed to be about football, as though Cam Newton isn't actually about football. Like, these guys have other interests as adults. And, like, are you telling me that, let's say you had Aaron Rodgers, right? He clearly has other interests besides football. I mean, is that what Matt Rhule's going to be worried about? I mean, would Bill Belichick can be happy with Cam Newton, what other excuse do coaches have when it comes to Cam Newton.
You can ask the 30 other coaches out there who didn't want him this past season.
Well, that's when you get, and that's when you get into, and that's when you get into hurt feelings. Like, I know why the Pittsburgh Steelers did not want to move on, because they don't want to hurt Ben Roethlisberger's feelings, even though that's hurting them as a franchise. The QB ego thing, man, is wild to me, and it seems like the only one who seems to get it right is Bill Belichick every single time. Now, it's worked out for Tom Brady in Tampa, obviously, but I don't blame Bill Belichick for gambling in that situation at the tail end of Tom Brady's career.
I mean, aren't they 8-4 right now on the top of the AFC?
And now we're all salivating over the possibility of a Tampa Bay New England Super Bowl.
Yeah. It took New England 1 year.
Yep.
They had the pandemic season, where you can use that as an excuse if you want. And they had, what, 5 or 6 guys? They had the most guys in the NFL who opted out last season. And now they're back with a rookie quarterback, and they got a full normal offseason, and they're right there, I think, behind Baltimore and second in the AFC. And things are all good and well. Yeah, the NFL always talks about being a meritocracy, but you rarely seemingly see that anymore, as folks don't want to do the hard time business that we see up in New England. And here in Carolina, we had a GM and Dave Gettleman who wanted to do that. Now, he might have gone a little bit overboard in how he handles relationships, and the previous owner wasn't on board with all that kind of stuff. I don't know what Matt Rhule necessarily was trying to do, other than just like, hey, I guess Cam's our best option. Maybe I made a mistake here and trying to salvage something. I think it's just desperate, like you mentioned. It's just a desperation move. I don't know how much he actually believes in Cam Newton, because if he believed in Cam Newton, then they probably would have kept him back in 2020. And I don't think that's necessarily a mistake. I think the biggest mistake was just not having a concrete plan at quarterback. And at this point in time, at 5-7 during the bye week, I don't know what the concrete plan for the Carolina Panthers is for the rest of the season, heading into the offseason, and then starting in the 2022 season.
Julian Council, Locked On Panthers podcast. Hey, man, appreciate the time. Everybody go check out that podcast. Give it 5 stars, because positive vibes only. We'll talk to you later, man.
Yep, appreciate it, Joe.
Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group hotline for The Athletic, covers the Carolina Hurricanes, Sarah Sivian. And the Canes are 20 games down, and they weren't going to do this undefeated thing. We understood that, but I can't help but get the sense after the Sunday loss to Washington that this, you know, with the Metropolitan Division and everything else, that game was a little bit of a recalibration of, yes, this is a fun team. Yes, they can contend. But they got a little bit more to go, and maybe even physicality was an issue on Sunday. What's your read on the Canes 20 games in?
Yeah, I mean, now that there's more kind of positive COVID cases, I feel like, I don't know, it's hard for me to completely judge the past few games. I don't know who's symptomatic. I don't know if people are tired, you know, and it was a long road trip. And I'm not making excuses, but I do think the stellar start to the season kind of gives them a little bit of grace. And I thought the last game against the Caps was excellent, and a few bad bounces kind of decided that one, I suppose.
Sarah Sivian of The Athletic joining us here on the OG alongside Lauren Brownlow. I'm Joe Ovias. Well, you got to my next part with COVID, because, yes, that is going to paint how we view what's about to transpire tonight against Dallas, or maybe how we viewed what happened against Washington, because there were 2 more positive cases, Tony D'Angelo and Brett Pesce. Meanwhile, Ethan Bear was stuck in a hotel room for the longest time, and I guess there's some optimism there. But the Canes seem to be taking this in a very, very serious manner that would lead to some speculation. They're not doing any in-person interviews. Things have gone on Zoom. And I know you asked Rod Brindamore, the head coach, about the severity of this. I mean, where do things stand right now?
Yeah. Well, I heard they're tightening protocols regardless around the league right now, because it's getting pretty bad around the league, unfortunately, especially with the Olympics coming up. But, yeah, I asked Brindamore what his level of concern is. He's holding his breath for more cases. And he said, yeah. He said, you never know what's going to happen. Guys are testing twice a day. And what happens if other guys are out? You don't have other players around. So that's going to be a dilemma. Like, on top of, it's like they're getting tested twice a day, so somebody could be taken out of this game. And then who do you even put in? I don't know. Someone's going to have to get on Dundon's private jet and jet over. Like,
fair enough. And I guess as a team is always looking to get better, or to kind of, you know, power through whatever issues are going on right now, I guess we got caught up in that lovely NHL media echo chamber of I'm hearing dot, dot, dot. I guess that happened with the Canes on social media, thanks to some NHL insiders. as it relates to Evander Kane. Do the Canes actually have any interest in Evander Kane?
I'm hearing ... my favorite phrase. yeah, so I asked Don Waddell because I heard people speculating on it, and that's fair because the Canes are kind of in on everything, and Dundon kind of makes everything open to speculation, which is kind of good for a small market team. But I asked about specifically Evander Kane and specifically Jake DeBrusk, two forwards, because, I mean, DeBrusk said he wanted to trade. The Canes have been interested in him in the past, and I love him. So I was like, I'm going to make this a narrative. But I asked about Kane and DeBrusk, and Waddell basically said, we're in a good place right now with our forward group. Like, they are always looking to improve the team. Maybe down the road something happens. But he said he doesn't want to comment on any specific player, but they're in a good place right now. And I'm reading that as they aren't interested in Kane or DeBrusk just because they are good with their forward group and their defense right now is kind of struggling. I mean, obviously with COVID, but that
right. I guess that's the other thing, too. You know, given the news that we're getting out of the Carolina Hurricanes, and Sarah Sivian of The Athletic joining us here on the OG, they're dealing with COVID right now. And you're talking about the tightening restrictions, and we can't just gloss over the fact that Evander Kane is serving a suspension because he submitted a fake vaccination card. And I know that's going to expire after they it expired on what, Sunday, right? So he cleared waivers and all that stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, given what you're going through right now, is that something you want to bring on? But then again, they also brought on Tony DeAngelo, and it's working out for him. So hey, might as well strike twice, right?
I think that's completely different. D'Angelo, don't get me wrong, has harmed communities with things he said and ideologies he follows on Twitter, but that's not, Twitter isn't real life.
Yeah.
And Kane has some serious allegations against him, not just the fake vaccination card, which is illegal, by the way. I don't know if there's any legal proceedings going on right now. I think there is, but not about that. But anyway, I think it's a bad idea, obviously, that goes without saying. But I do want to talk about the phrase have interest in, because over the summer, the Canes were reported to have interest in a certain player who had domestic allegations against him. Mm-hmm. And that got completely misconstrued. Like, they answered a phone call about the player for multiple reasons. And then the agent kind of went and said, okay, they had interest in this player. So I feel like we kind of need to be more specific when we're reporting about things like that, because maybe it comes up that the Canes did have interest in Kane because they answered a phone call, right? That doesn't mean they were seriously pursuing the player and they should not be doing that. But with Dundon's philosophy, I could see why he'd answer a phone call, like, just because that's him, you know?
Sarah Sivian, The Athletic, joining us here on the OG. Dallas, the opponent tonight. You can listen to that game on 99.9 The Fan. Alec Campbell will have Stormwatch before the game, Aftermath immediately following the game. And we'll close on this, Sarah, as it relates to, you know, on the on-ice product and not necessarily the stuff that's going on behind the scenes. And that is Andrei Svechnikov. We'll close on this. He gets the contract. He starts out hot. But things cooled off there for a little bit. This is just a natural ebb and flow of a season where some guys can get hot and cold, or is it just Svechnikov is a streaky player and we just have to live with that?
Yeah, you know what? I've been kind of soft on him just because I think he's a great kid, and I think you need to give him time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think the penalties, and I've really gone to bat with him that the penalties haven't all been his fault. At this point, you got to stop, you know, like, it's affecting his game and people around him. And I think I want to be a little more hard on him because I think he's such a great player and has such amazing potential. And he started out great, and I do think he's going to get back to form, but I do think it's kind of time to turn on the Jets right now with him, you know.
Sarah Sivian, The Athletic, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much. See you later.
Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group hotline for Giving Tuesday is Katie Sweet, Senior Manager of Communications. We've got Black Friday. Yesterday was Cyber Monday. But Giving Tuesday, I think, is the most important of these days following Thanksgiving, because a lot of this money goes to amazing causes like the V Foundation and their end-of-year Jimmy V Week that starts today. Katie, how are you?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
So with Giving Tuesday is a really simple concept. You're just looking for people to donate money to the V Foundation. You can always donate directly to the V Foundation online, right?
Absolutely. If you go to V.org, you can donate. And the wonderful thing about our organization is 100% of your donation will go to the cause. So whether you give $10 or $10,000, 100% will go to cancer research.
So that's for today, but there's also great stuff going on the rest of the week. I know tomorrow you can tune in to ESPN and the ESPN networks to see the Jim Valvano speech starting at 7 o'clock, another surprise guest. And then there's also UFC Fight Like Hell Night. What's going on with that on December 4th?
So that was kind of born out of Stuart Scott, and he was such a great V Foundation friend. And some people are aware that when he was undergoing treatment, he also was really into mixed martial arts. So I know there's a lot of great moments where he was not only fighting cancer, but he would get in the ring and also fight. So UFC felt like that was such a great connection, and they wanted to draw attention to the Stuart Scott Fund that we have. So not only are they making a $100,000 donation to the V Foundation, they are going to host Fight Like Hell Night, which was a famous Stewart's quote, Fight Like Hell. And that will just spend some time focusing on the Stuart Scott Fund, which fights disparities in cancer patients and among cancer researchers. So that's a pretty cool one. It's a chance to honor Stuart's life and legacy.
And then the following week on December 7th and then the December 12th, you have the Jimmy V Men's Classic, and that's followed by the Women's Basketball Classic. I know on the men's side of things, you've got Tennessee and Texas Tech, followed by Syracuse and Villanova. And on the women's side, on the December 12th, it's Kentucky at Louisville and Maryland at South Carolina. I mean, everything is so closely tied to basketball with Jimmy V, and the V Foundation has been tied to this event with basketball as well. And it's good to see these things keep going strong.
It is. It's just such a natural fit to have that. And, you know, it's fun to reflect on Jimmy V during those games and to, you know, just sort of keep that basketball legacy alive with him.
Katie Sweet joining us, Senior Manager Communications for the V Foundation, as V Week gets underway today on a Giving Tuesday. And also so closely tied to college basketball is Dick Vitale. And I know that you guys have been using the hashtag VStrongBaby with Dick Vitale's cancer diagnosis. He has been on ESPN front and center with this, and he's done so much for the V Foundation and for other causes. I mean, it only makes sense to have him in your corner.
Absolutely. I mean, he has spent decades now fighting for pediatric cancer research, and I just love, you know, all of his social media is dedicated to helping these kids, and he hosts a gala every year, and I have no idea where he gets this energy from, but he puts it to such a good cause. And now that he is facing his own cancer battle, we just want to take some time to say we love you, thank you for everything that you do, and best of luck to you as you face this journey. So if you go to V.org, there is a form that we have that you can fill out, and we'll make sure that the well wishes that you send to Dickie V will get to him. He's been saying that getting those messages has really boosted him, so we just want to flood him with all the love that he deserves.
Yeah, that's great. Katie Sweet, Senior Manager of Communications from the V Foundation, joining us here on the OG alongside Lauren Brownlow. I'm Joe Ovias. We close on this because this is the most important part of V Week and raising money. In the year isn't over, but my understanding is that $21 million has gone to cutting-edge cancer research. I mean, this is why this matters, right?
Absolutely. And our philosophy is pretty simple. We fund the best research nationwide. So we've funded everything from breast cancer to lung cancer, prostate cancer, you name it, we want to find answers. So we fund the absolute best researchers there are, and it's just absolutely critical, especially as we come out of this pandemic, that we focus on funding researchers. You know, that's a place that took a hard hit in COVID, and we just need to make sure that we continue to fund them, continue to see progress against cancer. And that's, year-end giving is a huge part of that.
Katie Sweet, Senior Manager of Communications for the V Foundation. Best of luck this week with V Week. Lots of things to get into. And as always, you can just go to the website and donate directly on a Giving Tuesday. Thanks, Katie.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. It's time for a rant to
acapella the news. Well, the big news, obviously, Lincoln Riley going to Southern Cal. You've got Brian Kelly going from Notre Dame to Baton Rouge, as everyone saw that coming because, you know, obviously. As a fan base, you gotta feel for them a little bit, Oklahoma and
no.
Notre Dame.
I don't.
I know you don't have to, but from the fan perspective.
They'll be fine.
From the fan perspective. This is probably what some of them are singing.
Oh, I see.
I see you driving out of town from the team I love, and I'm like, forget you. I guess the years you spent here, no, it wasn't enough. So then forget you and forget them too. Said the way you left us, it was kinda sus. Yeah, ain't that some shh. Although there's pain in our fan base, we'd look you in the face with a forget you. Yeah, I'm sorry, now we're on safari. I'm trying to find someone to replace you. I guess we were ramen, you wanted calamari.
Huh?
But don't lie to us about when you knew. I know some recruits that fell in love with you. Unsure where to go now, Baton Rouge or Southern Cal. I've got some news for you. Have fun being outside the CFP. I see you driving out of town. From
shout out
to
Shelby, the do-all in promotions, for helping me with the ramen calamari line.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Well done, Rand.
Not as much to rhymes as sorry as you think it does.
But when you're on Rhyme Zone,
oh, that's
my struggle on
listen,
that one.
I keep that side alive.
Oh, I mean, that's fine. what, you don't think you're you telling me that some of the greatest musicians of all time don't suddenly find themselves on Rhyme Zone? Are you telling me that the Beatles, with this new documentary, Get Back, if Google was around back then,
yeah.
Paul McCartney wouldn't just be on Rhyme Zone?
Probably.
He absolutely would.
Probably.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.